Hello.
Hello, everyone. How are you cool cats and kittens doing?
Oh, no, no, no.
No, no, no. It's Superman no here.
Yeah, let's not do that. You know what I just realized?
What's that?
This is the first time we have recorded and the sun is shining.
I also just realized that you have a window in this room.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that before. I mean, I'm sure I probably recognized it, but it didn't register, much like the trees in your front lawn.
You probably didn't register it because every time you have been in this room, it has been dark out and the blinds have been closed.
Night time.
We can actually see outside. It's a beautiful day.
Not a cloud in the sky?
I see a couple wispies.
Those are just jet trails.
Chemtrails. Yeah. How are you?
They're implanting the 5G. Oh, I'm good. I'm great. How are you doing, bud? How's your week been?
Long.
It has. It has been a long week.
It has. But it's over. That's the important thing.
True dat.
It's a real important thing. All right.
Now we're going to talk about fun stuff.
We are. We are going to talk about fun stuff. So I had never heard of this before, but I'm really happy I found it. It ended up being extremely interesting. So I am going to tell you all today about the Great Train Robbery of England in 1963.
Oh, train robbery.
Yeah. Okay. Train heist. This, I won't tell you how I found this story. We'll talk about that at the end.
Okay.
This is a good one.
Okay, I'm excited. Let's just dive right in.
All
right.
So on Wednesday, August 7th, 1963, at 6:50 p.m., a traveling post office train, didn't know those were a thing, traveling post office train left Glasgow Central Station and headed to Euston Station in London, where it was set to arrive at 4 a.m. the next morning. The train had 12 carriages and 72 post office staff who sorted mail during the journey. So apparently this was a thing that they used to do in Europe, having these...
So it's like a mobile post office, basically.
Yeah. And they would sort along the way. So they would collect mail at the origin station. So in this case, it would be Glasgow. And then also collect mail at additional stops along the way. Local post office staff in the areas that the train rode through would hang sacks of mail on hooks, and they would be scooped up with nets as the train went by. And then sorted mail would also be dropped off as they went through the areas, which made the whole process like super efficient and prevented the train from having to stop unnecessarily. So they just fly on through, they'd sort along the way, they'd pick up mail, they'd drop mail, and there you go.
Why are we not funding this? Why did this stop? It seems like this could solve so many post office issues. We still have so many unused railroad tracks. I don't know the tech, like somebody's probably listening to me and like, because coal, you dumb bitch. You're right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they stopped using them. I just imagine other technology became more efficient or cheaper or whatever.
That makes sense.
But I was like, hey, that's a great idea.
Really efficient.
Yeah. So one of the 12 carriages was the, I put the wrong acronym, the high value packages carriage. For short, I put HPV instead of HVP. that is wrong. HVP, high value packages carriage.
They were not carrying. What now?
They were not carrying an STD. Whoops.
Human papillomavirus on the board.
So that the HVP carriage was positioned right behind the engine carriage. So you'd start with the engine and then right behind it would be the high value one. So this coach would carry large amounts of money and registered mail. Typically, it would only carry about 300,000 pounds. Not like weight, but money, 300,000 pounds at any time. But on this particular day, it carried somewhere between 2.5 to 3 million pounds due to a bank holiday the previous weekend. So they just had way more on board than they normally do. in the early 1960s, so remember this is 63, very early 1960s, alarms started to be fitted to traveling post office trains with the high-value package carriages, but all were out of service at the time. So a train without the alarms and other security features, like bars on windows and stuff, had to be used.
So, like, when you say bars on the window, you mean, like, olden days, like, in my head, what I'm picturing is, like, a train car that used to be, like, a jail cell, and you can see, like, as people are riding, like, all the criminals are in their car, and they're like, let me out of this train.
Yeah,
I didn't rob this exact train. Let me out.
Yeah, they would put bars on the windows just as an extra security measure. But this one did not have that.
Imagine being on the, like, Polar Express. As you're riding through, Tom Hanks is like, you're not getting out today. It's just a little boy with a bell in his pocket, like, why? Why not?
So around 3 a.m. on August 8th, so the morning after the train left Glasgow, driver Jack Mills stopped the train at a red signal light between the Leighton, one of those pronunciations, Buzzard and Cheddington Railway Stations. The second man or fireman of the train, David Whitby, climbed down from the train to call a signalman from a lineside telephone because a stop was not expected here. But he found that the telephone cables had been cut. As he returned to the train, he was overpowered by a man while several other men entered the engine cabin where driver Jack Mills was and struck him with a kosh, which is basically a club.
Okay. Like a billy bat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got
some sabotage going on here, some hijacking.
Yeah. So they hit Jack Mills in the head and he is semi-unconscious.
Poor Jack.
I know. So this gang of men had hired an experienced train driver to move the train to Bredego Bridge, which was about half a mile from where the train was currently stopped, where they planned to unload the money in the high-value package carriage. However, the man they hired was retired and not experienced with this new type of train, so they had to get the driver, who they just hit in the head, to move it. The men who were originally in charge of moving the train but now couldn't were then just sent to the truck to help load bags. Once the train was stopped at Bredego Bridge, the gang attacked the high-value package carriage. Five workers were in there, two of which were hit with koshes when they tried to prevent the gang from getting in. There were no police officers or security guards on board the train anywhere at all. Also, I forgot to mention, the first two cars, so the engine car and the high-value package car, had been disconnected from the rest of the train. So the entire rest of the train, they were just sitting there and nobody knew that anything was wrong.
Those poor mail carriers.
They're just like, sorting mail back there.
This doesn't seem as rocky as usual. They're being real nice lately. I don't know why I gave them American accents and made them like old women.
Yeah, that's incredibly wrong, but that's okay.
But I do have one question.
Yeah.
So if we were to think about the amount of currency that's on board currently, mm-hmm. So 330,000 pounds, what does that equate to in like US dollars? Do we know?
No, it was 2.5 to 3 million pounds.
Oh, okay. Yes. Because it was exponentially larger for this trip because of the holiday. Yeah. Okay. So,
yep. Like, so in today's money, it's about 55 million pounds.
We gotta go rob a train. Let's go fucking.
They don't carry money like this anymore.
Damn it.
Unfortunately.
Honestly, this sounds like a scene out of a game I play called Red Dead Redemption. Like, there is a time when one of your tasks is a mission to rob a train.
Oh.
And I failed that task a gazillion times because there is a portion where you have to like shoot and run on train cars, and I'm not good at that apparently. So yeah, that's that in my head. The only thing I'm thinking of is like me playing a character like trying to rob this train. Cool.
Well, they didn't have any guns.
Oh,
and none of them were running on top of the train. So.
Time out. They just straight up robbed this train that has over 55 in today's dollar, $55 million with some Billy bats?
I think so.
Oh my God.
In all of my research, I did not see any mention of guns.
What on earth? Oh, yeah. They were such a trusting community.
This was the 60s. They were just like, bash somebody over the head and let's get on with it.
Yeah, you know what?
Pitter-patter.
Pitter-patter. That's what I was about to say. All right, I'm sorry. I derailed us.
You're good. Ba-dum-tsh. Okay, there were no police officers or security guards on board the train. So once the gang entered the high-value package carriage, there was really, like, there was nothing the postal workers could do.
Like, oh, shit.
Good try. There's five of you and however many of them. Like, it's not happening. Right. So the gang made the five staff lie face down in the corner of the carriage and brought the train driver, Jack Mills, and the second man, David Whitby, into the carriage with them, where they were handcuffed and then sat next to where the staff were. Of the 128 mail sacks in the high-value package carriage, 120 were removed by the gang of 16 men in about 15 to 20 minutes by forming a human chain. And just 30 minutes after the robbery began, they were gone. To try to mislead any potential witnesses, the gang used two Land Rover vehicles with identical registration plates along with the truck containing the mailbags. And they got the hell out of there.
Yo.
Just quick. In and out.
I'm still more like, that's a smart, like,
it's impressive. They were planning this for months and they had some like inside men. So they had some additional information to know like where the right place to go.
Cut the phone wires.
Yeah, that they were going to have stop. So much money.
I mean, kudos, yep. Man. They planned accordingly.
They did. Okay, so they leave the scene. And they travel along minor roads to Leather Slade Farm, which was about 27 miles from the crime scene and had been bought 2 months earlier.
Lily has found the flamingo.
Yes, she has.
In case you're wondering what that is not a macaw in the background just going, ah.
By the way, Lily is my dog.
No, it's actually like a small child.
We just give her dog toys. Okay, so Leather Slade Farm, it's about 27 miles from the crime scene and had been bought 2 months earlier to be used specifically as their hideout after the robbery. The trip took about 45 minutes to an hour, and they arrived at about 4:30 a.m., which was about the same time the first reports of the robbery were being made.
Oh, wow. Good timing.
Yeah. So the men took to counting their haul and divvying up into 16 full shares and then several smaller sums to be given to associates. The full shares came to approximately 150,000 pounds each, which in today's money is approximately 3 million pounds. They also played a game of Monopoly with their money. Because why not?
You know what, dude? That is baller. I didn't know Monopoly was alive back then.
Yeah.
But then I'm thinking, like, I keep reminding myself that this is like 1963. This is not, it's like
70 years
something
ago.
Years ago. Yeah. I'm terrible at math. I legitimately had to think of that. I was about to be like 85. And I was like, that's too much.
Yeah.
Too many years.
So the gang, while all this was going on, they were listening to a police-tuned radio, and they heard that the police had calculated the robbers to be somewhere within a 30-mile radius of the crime based on information from a witness who said one of the robbers told them not to move for half an hour. So by some simple math, they thought, okay, they didn't split up. We know they didn't split up with the haul. They have to be within 30 miles hunkering down somewhere. They also realized the police were using a dragnet tactic, which traditionally means you define some sort of area and then conduct brief interviews with everyone mm-hmm. within it, which led them to believe, which led the robbers to believe their farm would be discovered much quicker than they had originally anticipated. So because of this, their timeline for leaving the farm was moved up from Sunday to Friday, which was the day after the crime was committed.
Oh, wow. So they were going to spend like 3 days there just playing Monopoly with their money.
Yep. Just and hunkering down.
They were like, oh, shit. They got us. Who was the dumbass who was like, don't move for 30 minutes? 31, you're good. 29, mm-mm.
I don't even know.
You know, everybody was looking at each other like, give me your share. Give me your share. Like, come on. Right now.
I wonder, too, like, how... So, obviously, they had a lot of information and a lot of, like, inside knowledge and connections within the... I'm guessing the postal office and stuff. So, I wonder if a part of it wasn't just some of them were just very arrogant that they were going to very easily get away with this.
Yeah.
But, yep, it happened. Some dumb shit said that. Okay, and then... So, they decided to move the day up that they were going to leave. Because the train staff had also seen their vehicles while they were there doing their heist, the gang had to find new transportation from the farm, and they did that with the help of some associates. One such associate was asked to go back to the farm, do some cleanup, and set fire to the whole place. When members of the gang called the associate to ensure the cleanup job was done, they didn't believe his assurances, and he eventually confessed to never having done it. By the time the gang members were ready to head back to the farm to do the cleanup themselves, the police had discovered it.
Oh, God.
5 days after the robbery, on August 13th, police received a tip from a farmer with a field adjacent to Leather Slade Farm. They found the truck used in the robbery, which had been painted yellow, along with the two Land Rovers. Food, bedding, sleeping bags, post office sacks, mail packages, banknote wrappers, and a Monopoly board game.
They counted that in the evidence?
Well, hold on. So, it holds more significance.
Oh my God, no.
So, the farm had been cleaned of fingerprints. They had wiped surfaces down and whatnot. But some items, such as a ketchup bottle and the Monopoly board, had been overlooked and contained finger and palm prints, which the police had to assume were of the robbers. There was all the other physical evidence there, the banknote wrappers. Like,
nope. No. I'm so mad. This is like when you find out that, like, I don't even know. Like,
what a mistake. They were like, they were so cocky. They get back to the farm and they're like, look at all this money I have. Let's play Monopoly. Like, what up?
We don't even need the fake banker's money. I got my own, bitch.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And that became
their demise.
Is that a downfall?
That was their downfall.
They got their fingerprints.
Oh.
So, a really big break. In the case came when police were contacted about someone willing to give information in exchange for they wanted parole and some other favors. This informant gave the police several names, and then another informant, a female informant, came forward later and filled in some information gaps and then supplied some more names to the police. In total, informants gave 18 names, which police then worked to match up with the fingerprints collected from Leather Slade Farm. Photos of the wanted suspects were also published, and then several arrests followed in the coming weeks. Seven of the men involved in the robbery were sentenced to 30 years in prison. Two were sentenced to 25 years, one to 24 years, one to 20 years, and then one was sentenced for 3 years.
Oh, that's the rat. That's the one. That's the he rolled over on everyone.
No, they don't know. The rat was in prison when the robbery went down. Oh. So he was not one of these guys.
What?
He just somebody blabbed to him about it before he got arrested. Mm. And so he had information.
And did he use that to leverage his time in prison, I'm assuming?
One can only assume it didn't have his name.
Mm.
His name was never released, but he worked it.
How did that one guy get 3 years? Oh, God, I was just a guy who...
I think he was just an outside associate. I don't think he had any, like, he wasn't, like, at the robbery. He just kind of helps them do certain things.
The guy who cut the cords to the telephone. Like, all you got to do is run up to this thing, just do a snip, snap, walk away, and you have yourself 15,000 pounds.
More than that.
Probably.
Okay, Monopoly. Oh my God. All these guys got sentenced on August 12th, 1964. One of the robbers, named Charles Wilson, he escaped from Winson Green Prison in Birmingham in less than 3 minutes with the help of a three-man team that broke into the prison to get him. 2 weeks after, he was in Paris for plastic surgery, and by the end of 1965, he was in Mexico City. He eventually took up home in Montreal under the name Ronald Alloway, where his wife and three children joined him. And then he was arrested in January 1968 after inviting his brother-in-law in the UK over for Christmas. Mm. And Scotland Yard got word, and they found him.
Again. Dumb. Like, all of these, like, just all the, he was in Mexico. He made it. And then he was like, yeah, you know what? Come on down, man. That's great.
This room was You'll never for get me,
coppers. Send him a fucking Christmas card. Jeez.
You really wanted to see him.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know what? When you create and you commit crimes like that and you you get plastic surgery to change your face, you don't get to see your family anymore. Honestly, just send them postcards. Everyone, if you're listening and you are crafting up a mastermind criminal activity, don't do what they did. Also, don't do that, but don't do what they did.
Just send a postcard.
Just send a fucking postcard.
Yep.
From a post office three towns away from you with your opposite hand and just be like, hey, thinking of you. Done.
Why with your opposite hand?
So they can't trace your handwriting.
Oh, that's what you meant. Okay.
Unless you're ambidextrous, then you're screwed. Maybe use your feet. Or get one of your children to write it.
Words to live by, Monica.
Or just, you know, don't rob banks or trains.
Yeah, that's probably a good first step.
I feel like we skipped a lot of things to get where we are. Maybe just don't do that.
Yep. That's a good start. Okay, another of the robbers, Ronnie Biggs, he also escaped. He escaped from Wandsworth Prison in July of 1965. A furniture van parked alongside the prison wall, and then a ladder was dropped over the 30-foot walls, allowing four prisoners to escape, including Ronnie. Biggs paid a very large sum of money to be smuggled to Paris for plastic surgery. Apparently, Paris was the place to go.
Got for that undercover surgery? Plastic surgery dude just being like, ah, give me your money, I'll make you do it. Get you all the way to Mexico for you to screw it up.
Well, this guy went a different route. He, in 1970, he moved to Adelaide, Australia.
Oh.
Then he moved to Melbourne. Yeah. And then to Brazil after learning police had discovered his address in Australia. He couldn't be extradited back to England because there was no peace treaty between England and Brazil. And B, he had a Brazilian son, which gave him legal immunity.
He got amnesty.
He lived safely and openly in Rio for many years before, after having some health issues, he decided to return to England in May 2001. He was immediately arrested, which he knew was going to happen, and sent back to prison. And then in August 2009, he was released on compassionate grounds because he was a very sick man at that point.
Okay. I almost had one of those like mental breakdowns where I was like, why would you do that? But then I thought, okay, if I was very sickly and I didn't think I had long left, I'd probably be like, you know what, F it. I'll go back home. No more postcards.
Yeah.
I have the money. It's fine.
Yeah. He said something about he just wanted to walk down the street and go get a beer at a pub.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. See, the comforts that you miss.
That's home.
I don't think I'd miss any of that. But I can understand in England.
Yeah. He had been gone for a very, very long time. And yeah. he knew what he was doing by going coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he knew.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
So other than those two guys, most of the other robbers eventually were just released from jail and went on to live their lives. There was one guy who got into drugs, but most of the other guys, from what I was able to find, they went on and lived the rest of their lives.
Did they get to keep their money?
No, a lot of that got... Okay. Yes and no. A lot of it got recovered in some way or another. A lot of guys like transferred their money to other people for safekeeping. And by the time they got out of prison, it was squandered away.
I'd kill you. Sorry, not you specifically. I'd squander away my money. But like in general, if I was like, here, safe, keep this. And then I came back and my like family just was like, oh, I lost it. Playing darts.
Yeah. There were some guys who their families had like invested it and actually done smart things with the money. And a couple guys got out and lived pretty
comfortably,
pretty cushy lives. But for the most part, not a lot of guys
had that luxury.
Yeah.
Damn.
So for the victims. So remember our two guys from the train.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one, the train driver, Jack Mills. This poor guy had constant trauma headaches for the rest of his life as a result of getting beat over the head. He eventually died in 1970 from leukemia. And then the second man, David Whitby, was traumatized by what he endured during the robbery and never really recovered. He was able to go back to being a second man, but died of a heart attack at the age of 34 in 1972.
34?
Yep. And that was the Great Train Robbery of England of 1963.
So for the premise of what we're talking about today, we're talking about like the idea behind this episode was, I guess, like smart but dumb criminals. So a smart crime, dumb criminals. Like everything about this was foolproof. Like honestly, they legitimately could have gotten away with this. Like you
absolutely
almost done it. And I mean, I think it goes back to just really getting people involved that you would trust to do these kind of things, because that's your loose ends,
or
always the loose ends.
Or how about you like just don't do it?
Well, yeah. I mean,
but if you're going to. Okay, that was one issue that I took with the whole thing. There were more than 18 men
exactly
involved.
That's the big thing. Like, how necessary were those 18 men? Now, granted, for the human chain to get out of there as quickly as possible, maybe that's the sole reason they had those 18 men there. And, like, disconnecting the cars and all that other stuff. 'Cause, I mean, I'm not an engineer. I don't know anything about trains. But at the end of the day, when you think about it, that was just... The whole plan was just based off of efficiency, and that was inefficient manpower. It was too much. Too much. Way too much. And so then, I mean, they went so far as to, like, get three identical vehicles to throw the trail off.
Two identical
for the one actual kind of thing.
Yep.
And, like, I mean, literally, they thought of everything. And then they ask, like, why wouldn't you ask your, like, right-hand man, whoever was the coordinator of this whole thing, look, you are going to go back there and you're going to clean up everything. You're going to destroy all the evidence. You ask an associate? It's like you wanted to get caught. You're like, yeah, you know what? We're millionaires now. I don't have time for your pettiness.
Or just go do it yourself. Like, if you need something to be done, why, like, go do it yourself. Like, I am very much a person, and this is a character flaw. But, like, it's hard for me, if there's something really important, it's hard for me to trust that somebody else is going to get it done.
No, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's character flaw. I mean, at the end of the day, delegation is key. If you need to delegate, that's one thing. But when it comes to the assurance and security that your freedom is on the line,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a delegation aspect. That's, like, either I do it and I know for a fact it got done. That way, if I get caught, I know I didn't do something. That's my fault. But, like, I'm putting my pending millions of dollars. Like, you made a really bad bet. You just got done playing Monopoly, and you probably lost all your shit.
I just picture these guys. They're, like, making it rain. And they're like, let's play Monopoly.
And he goes, look what I bought with my first thing I bought, Monopoly. I love this game.
Sitting around having a grand old time playing with their real money. And then their Monopoly and a fucking ketchup bottle.
That's the other thing. I didn't touch on that before, but like, I get it. I love ketchup.
I do too.
But I don't know. That's like the story I was telling earlier about the guy who like had committed some really heinous crime, and for 15 years they didn't catch him. And he was so smart about like wiping his spoons down. He didn't throw his trash out. He took it straight to the dump and like did, I don't know what he did. Maybe he had his own compass. I don't know. But like he dropped a basket in Robin's cup into a mall trash can 15 years after this crime was committed. And that's how they got him. Because his DNA was on the stupid spoon. And I watched that episode. I think it was a Forensic Files. And the giddiness on this old-ass cop's face. And he was like, I knew it was him. It is like those, like that was this one thing that you could have just not done.
Yeah.
And you would have been fine.
Stop stuffing your face full of ice cream.
You don't get to enjoy that anymore.
Stay safe.
Send postcards. Baskin Robbins, thinking of you. Write this for daddy, okay? Write this for daddy. Put a little heart on it. Send it to Baskin Robbins for me. Thanks. They almost got away with it.
Almost. Downfall.
Monopoly. Via
Monopoly.
Monopoly.
And that damn catsup.
Catsup.
The delicious goodness.
You know, I'm like in my head. It makes sense, but I'm also in my head shocked that like it existed. Like I'm struggling with this time difference because Monopoly? It's no the ketchup.
What?
I know it's not too long ago, but I'm struggling with the time difference.
When was ketchup invented? 1812.
Oh my god. When was Monopoly invented?
I don't think too much longer after that.
1812.
1935.
A little bit longer. That's like 100 more than 100 something years.
But definitely, I love how earlier you were like, was Monopoly even around then? Like, yeah. That's an old ass game.
I'm surprised. Monopoly, and I think we said this before, ruins everything.
It really does.
Friendships.
Marriages.
Ex-marriages. Divorces.
Ruins everything.
We've never played Monopoly, but I'm assuming that's why we're not married.
That's the only reason?
The one and only.
Mm. Aside you're probably right.
From the fact that you're already married.
But I wasn't married when I met you.
No, it's true.
We were friends for a while before I got hitched.
We were very drunk.
A good portion of the time, yes.
I think this means that we need to play Monopoly now.
What are you doing after this?
Do you have Monopoly?
I do.
Then we're playing fucking Monopoly.
Let's do it, man. We'll play it with the wives. We'll get the wives involved.
Yep. Yep.
Let's set some ground rules.
Absolutely. No train robbery after.
Just, or before.
That no, that's my like one.
I think I can agree to that.
Okay.
It's a bit of a stretch. I don't want to agree to it, but I will.
Everyone else, I hope you have not lost friends, family, loved ones of any sort to Monopoly. I think that that could traumatize a person. But also, please don't go out and rob trains or banks.
Yeah, I don't recommend it. Or just
rob. Don't rob.
I don't recommend it.
0 out of 10.
You're gonna come up with this elaborate plan that you spent months executing for your downfall to be
Monopoly.
A board game. Or a bottle of ketchup.
Or yeah, exactly. Which goes like, I mean, if you're gonna put all this elaborate thought into all like nefarious things, and you don't think about the small, the minuscule things, then that is what, you know what? You don't deserve it. You don't deserve it.
I mean, you don't deserve it to begin with, but.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, I'm sorry. Okay. You're telling me that if there is a perfect plan, could not get in trouble whatsoever, and it took you years and years. Like, have you ever seen Ocean's 13?
Yes.
This shit was amazing. They deserved that. Maybe I'm biased because Anne Hathaway was in it.
That was Ocean's 8.
Was it? Oh, yeah, because Rihanna. Man, I see, again, double movie titles, different numbers. I'm not good with math. We're about to play Monopoly.
You're the perfect person to play Monopoly with, then, if you're not good at math.
I know, you guys are going to fucking railroad me. You. I'm making a lot of railroad puns tonight.
The last time Rachel and I played Monopoly, Rachel got real low on money and we weren't out of properties yet. And so she didn't have enough money to buy the stuff. So we had to auction it per the rules. And so
you can auction it.
Yeah. She just kept saying $30. And I would say $31. And I just kept racking up properties.
You're such a dick.
I played Price is Right rules. Because, you know, they'll either do $1 or they'll do, like, yeah. 701.
Me. It's like, the showcase is worth $1. $99. It's actually worth, like, $8,000.
It's an effective strategy. I mean, how many people have won the, not the showcase showdown, but the first thing that they do when there's all of them up front? By betting $1.
Yeah, or you just look at the previous people's bet. If you're the last person betting, you have the best hand.
True.
We've gotten off topic. I'm sorry. You're wrapping up.
We squirreled big time. That's all right.
So all right, that Joe. Guy who was supposed to clean up, he squirreled big time.
I think he just did a runner. He was like, fuck y'all.
Yeah, he was like, ha, yeah, I totally did it. I did good. No, I didn't do it.
No, you can't have your money back.
No refunds. You only pay me.
All right, friends. Thanks for joining us. We hope to have you back next week.
Talk about more bank robbery stuff. Or not.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I'm down for more. This also wasn't a bank robbery. It was a train robbery.
I keep saying bank, but all the money was coming from a bank. So that's
was it?
Yeah, and you said it was the banks were on holiday. I don't know. I messed up your story like 70 times now.
I'm cutting all this out.
All right, everyone. You guys have a great night. Go do lawless heathen stuff, but not enough to go to jail.
Be lawful heathens.
We're also still working on a tagline for when we close this stuff out. I've got some really ridiculous ones. I have an idea. That I'll post it up after we become like a little bit more known to see if people want to pick their favorite.
You could do like a poll on Twitter.
Yeah. So, I mean, after, you know, we get a couple followers, like
like five.
Right now we're at 2, which is our wives. So after we get a couple followers, yeah, we'll post this. I got some really stupid ones and some really funny ones. I put some stuff into a generator and some really interesting stuff came out.
So I'm excited. Yeah.
Stay lawless.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Speaking of Twitter, hit us up on our social media at Lawless Heathens on Twitter and Instagram. You can also email us at lawlessheathenspodcast@gmail.com.
I don't know why I make you say that every time. Like, I know where they could hit us up at, but you're always the unfortunate soul who has to say all the words.
I'm the one that remembers, which is weird considering you're the one that mans
the social media. Yeah, hit us up on our social media, on all the platforms.
Go talk to Monica.
Go talk to me.
I might log on every once in a great while.
She don't do social media.
It's just not my thing. It's just not my bag.
And yet we're talking to the world. Have a good night, everybody.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Y'all didn't do your best.